You are listening to Grandpa Lampshade's Thoughts of the Day on RadioArian.com.
That's right, folks. Once again, it's time for the one and only Thoughts of the Day program with your one and only host, Grandpa Lampshade. Really glad you're with us this week. We're going to have a great time. As always, we'll have the Church of the Lampshade segment at the end of the show. And lots of stuff to discuss, lots of stuff to visit about this week. Good times. This week's show sponsored in part by Seattle Kurt, Arthur, and Filbert Applebag, who will also be providing our outro music this week. So a little special treat for you this week. Well, hopefully the next few weeks, I think we're going to have some original listener music for you, which is just a lot of fun. I really love it when we get original listener music. So yeah, I think we've got some of that lined up as well. So again, thank you to Filbert Applebag for providing our outro music this week. And remember, if you want to be in on sponsoring the show, be a Bitcoin bro. I've had several of you ask me how to get in on it. It's not too hard. And of course, the rules are different in different countries. Here in America, it's pretty easy to set up. And once you do it, hey, you'll be glad you did. Because it's not just for this show. I mean, for all of those who are, let's say, pro-white, you know, this is pretty much the only way we've got to where the Jews cannot shut us down. So again, always appreciated. And if I happen to miss you somehow, I try to keep up with these things as much as I can. Please be sure and give me a holler so I can get you mentioned, because again, I do very much appreciate any and all sponsorship and support of the show. And I appreciate y'all taking the time to sit down with us this week again for another visit. I hope all of y'all are in good health. Hope you're safe out there. Hope things are going well for you as you join us for this week's show. As you might imagine, you know, I'm out and about on these interwebs on pretty much a daily basis. I unplug most of the time on the weekends. So, you know, with that in mind, if y'all send me something or email or something, a question or something for the show over the weekend, I'm probably not going to get it. I pretty much, like I say, I unplug from these things. And a lot of times something newsworthy will happen over the weekend. People are like, oh, hi, did you get in on the show? And it's like, man, I don't even know. I unplug from all this stuff. And it is, it's important. I've was talking to one of y'all here recently, and you kind of walked away from this just from burnout, and you know, and as predicted, the person I talked to, you know, they're back, and it's great to have you back, and I totally understand it. I really do. When y'all, I talk to y'all, and some of you get burned out and feel like just walking away for a while. You really should walk away, but you know, come on back. The door's always open. You never have to feel like, well, I kind of said I'm done with this, you know, I'm sick of dealing with these idiot normies, and I'm out of here now. I want to come back, and I'm kind of embarrassed. Don't be. I mean, really, you got to do what you got to do, and you got to do to keep yourself mentally healthy and in a good place. You know, and again, that's why I unplug from this stuff a day or two out of the week, at least one day out of the week. I don't do this. I unplug. I'm not on social media, and I'm doing other things that I enjoy doing. You only get one life. I mean, the work we're doing is important. It is. I mean, obviously it is, but you do only get one life, and you need to try to enjoy it the best way you can. And there's nothing sinful or wrong about finding things to enjoy in this life besides, you know, the work you have to do. It's all about balance, everything. Whether you're talking about your wage job in normie land, or whether you're talking about this very important work we're doing, trying to save our people. Race, you know, you've got to strike a certain amount of balance, and you've got to have things that you enjoy doing, things that you unwind doing, and just, you know, balance of family and things such as this. And if you can come as close as you can to striking that balance, you'll be a better person for it. You'll be more effective, and you'll be happier. So anyway, all of that out of the way, I'm out and about on these interwebs pretty much every day. and I see all sorts of things. And somebody pointed me towards an article the other day, and I'm not going to name out who wrote the article. This is a pro-white person, and again, I'm not going to name it because I don't want to come off as attacking them. I am going to disagree with some of the points on this, and it was basically an article discussing about, once again, why we should stop naming the Jews. And they're not denying that the Jews are a problem. They were just counter-signaling against the effectiveness of it. It's a legit argument. I mean, you know, everybody, just because I don't require that everybody agrees with me or they're not really. I understand everybody has different ideas and everybody's obviously free to believe those ideas and to pursue those things and take the path that they think is correct. But I thought it was worth discussing because these were fairly legitimate points brought up, and you know, but I'm going to discuss why I think that is incorrect. And it really, it boils down, the main point of why in this article I read of why we should stop with the Jew naming, and the pretty much the main argument boiled down to the simple fact that it doesn't work. And it's a good argument. It doesn't work. I mean, you know, obviously, we don't want to be wasting our time doing shit that doesn't work. I mean, and anyway, the argument is essentially that we're better off using dog whistle terms, you know, the globalists, the fake media, things such as, and let the people figure out it's the Jews on their own. And again, the boiling it down to it, the argument was that it hadn't worked. This naming the Jew thing has never worked. It's not working. We're better off using this roundabout tactic. And again, I don't want to come off as attacking the person. They're sincere in what the deal. That's why I'm not naming them and quoting the article here. But the argument itself is what I want to talk about because, I mean, this isn't the only person who's putting forth this argument right now, this belief. And again, I disagree with it, and I thought we'd talk a little bit about why I disagree with it. First off, the point that it doesn't work, that it's never worked. And a lot of people look around and say, yeah, you know, that's a legit point. This Jew naming thing doesn't work. How many people have we gotten elected by naming the Jews? It hasn't worked out for Nealon or Little. They didn't get elected. Well, we're gonna hit several points with this because there's just a lot of things we can talk about. So I guess you would have to start from the point of what do you believe? What purpose do you believe voting and elections serve? If you believe that we can actually turn this thing around, turn our nations around with elections and voting, then we can stop here because the argument about Jew naming is totally legit. And again, I'm not saying you can't do that. If that's what you think, then I would say that you're right. If you believe that by voting in elections, we can turn this thing around, we can save our nations, we can get our white ethno states, and really everything will be hunky-dory. We can do this by voting and via elections. And if you believe that, then I agree with you that naming the Jews probably not the way to go because it's going to be tough to get people elected. This just simply isn't my point of view. I do believe voting can serve purposes for it. I've talked about before how I believe that I encourage everybody at the midterms to go out and vote straight R regardless of who's running for the simple fact that if the leftists don't get their blue wave, a lot of them are going to quit believing in the voting scam and the democracy lie. And that's a good thing. If you believe voting can be used in certain instances as a short-term tool, then naming the Jews is very successful. You look at, Nealon and Little, and people said, well, they didn't get elected to nothing. No, but they named the Jews. They have named the Jews publicly and, you know, honestly have gotten quite a bit of media attention. People say, but yeah, that's a secret trick by the Jews. Trust me, it's not. It's not. If it is, it's the worst trick ever. If these guys are somehow secret shills, and yes, I've heard that argument. These guys are secret shills trying to make us look stupid and bad. And they're very bad people, very bad guys. Well, I'll tell you this. If they are, if Little and Neil, I mean, because if the Jews, I'm going to tell you right now, if the Jews are willing to pay me a shitload of money to go around and publicly name them, Shlomo, get in touch with me. You know, we'll work something out because if that's some sort of secret Jew plan, then it's the worst plan ever. And I don't believe it is because I think a lot of things about the Jews. I criticize the Jews a lot. I don't think they're stupid. I think they do things that are counter to their own interest just by genetic instinct. But I don't think these rats are stupid by any stretch of the imagination. And going around having somebody paid off to publicly name them would be a really, really stupid move. So I just don't think that's the case. And again, if it is, then great, because it furthers our purpose. I don't think elections are going at the elections and democracy and voting are the tool that has brought us to where we are. That's historically observable fact. I mean, we got here some way, and that's the avenue that we got here, where we're at now. So yeah, a lot of that divide starts right there. With what your, so if you're having a discussion, a disagreement with somebody there, that's a good place to start. Well, wait a minute, what's your view on voting? And if the person you're arguing with believes that we can turn this around voting, then you need to stop there, because y'all are coming from fundamentally different places and you're wasting each other's time. Because, you know, I mean, you're both right. It just depends on which way is the better way to go. Again, I don't think so. I don't think you're going to cure yourself. I don't think you're going to cure cancer by smoking more cigarettes. Yes, for instance. You know, I just don't think that's possible. And I don't think you're going to save your nation with the very thing that has been used to destroy your nation. Now, all of that out of the way, back to the original point, naming these Jews, it hasn't worked. It's never worked. Well, that's not correct. It's just literally not correct. It worked in Nazi Germany. Oh, there he goes with that Nazi stuffy. This isn't Nazi Germany. You're not, I know this isn't Nazi Germany, but bear with me. On the one hand, you cannot say naming the Jews has never worked, because it has. Historically speaking, it's worked. So that's incorrect. Yes, nobody's claiming we're in Nazi Germany right now. We're going to resurrect Nazi Germany. That's a straw man argument. Nobody's wanting to do that. But you cannot also, on the other hand, say it's never worked, because it has worked. It worked in Nazi Germany. Well, okay, but what about in more modern times? It hasn't worked for white nationalists 1.0, you know, back in the, say, the 80s, 90s, and things such as the 70s even. Naming the Jews didn't work. It hasn't worked in decades. I mean, yeah, you can go all the way back to Nazi Germany, Grandpa Lampshade, but it hasn't worked since then. It didn't work in the 70s, didn't work for the previous generations of white nationalists before. Why do you think it's going to work now? And here's what I wanted to get to, because you can tie these things together. So let's ask ourselves this. Why did it work in Nazi Germany, but it didn't work for white nationalists, say, through the 70s, 80s, and 90s? That's the question, everybody, you need to stop and ask yourself. Why did it work for Hitler? Why has it not worked previously? And I would argue that it's working for us now. Some of you are impatient and you're angry and it's like, we want to see results right now. Never mind, this has been probably, you could argue, 100 years in the making as far as these Jews' plans. We want to see results now in the last year and a half, 3 years. We want results right now. I would argue that if you look at where we were 10 years ago and look at where we are now, we are being successful. We are being successful with naming these Jews. Now, I guess it's a debatable point. It all depends on your point of view. But I think we've been successful with naming these Jews. I look around at our recent successes. And I do. I think our ranks are growing and more people are starting. And I do. I interact with people that say, you know, a couple. And they tell me, you know, and I'm not saying they're saying I did it. They're talking about all of you did it. They say, you know, a couple years ago, you know, I didn't believe, I thought all y'all were crazy with the Jew stuff, but I kept seeing y'all talking about it. And I actually, you know, started looking into this and started noticing the Goyim noticed. Once the Goyim start noticing and start overcoming the programming, it all comes together. I do think it works. Now, but why did it work in Nazi Germany? Why didn't it work since? Because it is. It's a legit question. It's a legit point to bring up. The answer is public platforming. What do I mean by that? Naming the Jew works. If it didn't, the Jews wouldn't work night and day to shut us down from doing it, by the way. You know, if naming the Jews just made us look stupid and was ineffective, what would, if you were the Jew, put yourself in the shoes for the moment of the rat kikes. If you were the Jews and you looked around and, boy, the worst thing that these white goyim could do would be run around pointing at us, you would want them to do that, wouldn't you? But yet they don't. They work tirelessly to shut us down. Public platforming. Now, let's look at Nazi Germany for a minute, because we can learn from history. Again, nobody's arguing we can recreate Nazi Germany. We can learn from history. Hitler managed to gain a public platform to name the Jews. If he was just running around talking to individual people on the street about the Jews, they'd just be like, yeah, okay, whatever, crazy guy. But he was able to get a public platform. He got an organization, and they made public speeches. And every time he made these speeches naming the Jews, his rallies got bigger. Now, people will sit there and say, well, this is a proof that we've got, you know, if we're not going to get anywhere unless we're doing public rallies now. No, stay with me here on this. They didn't have the internet back then. They didn't have, you know, they had, you could do newspapers. That was all owned by the Jews. There wasn't no way that was going to happen. So they would hold public rallies. And of course, what did the Jews do? They sent their Marxists, they sent their communist street agitators in to attack the National Socialists and shut them down. That's why they always take it to Hitler's brown shirts. You know, the brown shirts were brought about as a defense against Antifa of the day, the communist street muscle who would show up with axe handles and bats and everything else and attack them. So they came up with the brown shirts. They had to have a security force. They had to have a defense force to have their public platform, so they could reach the people. It worked because the Nazis managed to establish a public platform to get the word out. Yes, naming the Jew doesn't work if nobody hears it, but they managed to have a public platform. Now, fast forward to the, say, 70s, 80s, and even the 90s, pro-white people, white nationalists in this country. Why did naming the Jew not work? What public platform did they have? Go down to the courthouse and hold a rally with six guys talking about the Jews and things such as that. And the only media coverage, the only way people hear about it is through the Jew-run media painting you as a bunch of weirdo, oddball fringe lunatics and making you look stupid. In other words, there was no public platform. There's no public platform there. You know, they would try to do it the old fashioned way, but there was just no way to do that. There was no way to organize. The federal government was watching because, you know, the Tsar government, they were watching. And anytime they tried to organize in a way to where they could get up enough people to start making a public presence and getting the word out there, they would just become so fed, infiltrated that the whole thing would fall apart. Now, what has changed? The internet. Oh, I can hear some of y'all saying, yeah, you're with them. It's a fact. I'm sorry, it's not the internet doesn't fit your romantic view of how this should come about. But the fact of the matter is the internet has once again brought us a public platform. That's why we're seeing success now. Because just like with the National Socialists, when they were struggling in the early years, in Germany. Now we have a public platform. And what do? It's the same playbook. This shit just goes around and around in a circle. Same playbook. They're shutting us down. They're running around. They're not sending out Marxist street muscle because we're on the internet. So what do? They shut us down. They kick us off platforms. They try to attack us. They try to frame us as something that we're not. Try to get people. They go on to platforms where they can't throw us off right now, such as Gab. And they infiltrate and they try to tell the Goyim, don't listen to him. I'm a fellow patriot like you. Mute the Nazis. Don't listen to him. Because they want to deplatform us. This is the internet version of sending in the communist labor unions with axe handles and attacking us. They want to deplatform us. Why? Because it works. Because if we continue to name these Jews, people more and more, at some point in time, it becomes undeniable. It's a freaking Jew again. It doesn't seem like, for a lot of the people, I don't know that it's ever going to soak in. It's like the 6 millionth demonstration that it's the Jews again. Yes, but I saw this Jew one time on a movie and he was totally not like that in my melting pot and my Statue of Liberty poem and my Israel. Yeah, I mean, idiots are idiots. There's nothing you can do about that. But again, we have a public platform now in the internet that now, like the National Socialists in Germany. Now we have a public platform to name these Jews, and we are beginning, we are seeing success. That's what makes it different. When you say, oh, well, it's never worked, you mean people say that, they mean it didn't work for previous white nationalists in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Well, yeah, it didn't because they didn't have a public platform. They were naming the Jews and nobody was hearing it. It wasn't that their message was wrong, it's just they didn't have a way to get the message out. But now we do. And this is why they work so feverishly to shut us down. Now, before we move on from this topic, I would make one other point. To the argument that naming the Jews doesn't work, hasn't worked, never going to work, I would say this, suggesting a tactic of we should go roundabout and not name the Jews. I mean, really, how different is that from conservatism for the last, say, 40 years, 50 years? I would argue that not naming the Jews, if you want to see how successful that tactic is, let's look at conservatism. If you're not naming the Jews, how do you guard your movement against subversion? Because who are you worried about it subverting? Those guys that we're not going to mention. You see, I believe if you're going to say that naming the Jews has never worked, I would say not naming the Jews has never worked. You know, I mean, where in the last 40 years of conservatism has anything but naming the Jews actually worked? It's actually gone the other direction. It's actually brought things down. We've gone further and further behind. So again, I think you could make a better argument would be that not naming the Jews is what actually has never worked. Thought we'd move on to some other things, all kinds of things to talk about. Yeah, stuff I see. Our people. Look around at our people. I don't know. I see so many things in our people that are just, I realize a lot of it is just the product of the culture and stuff and the programming and things such as this. But it's hard to keep up hope. It really is. It's hard to keep up hope for these people because there's just so much wrong. There's just so much wrong. Or people have no pride. Now, they have a lot of them have self-esteem and importance. And this is kind of what I wanted to talk about for a minute. The difference between pride and arrogance. One of the problems with the English language, I think, is that it lacks nuance. You know, it lacks a way. We have one word that's kind of a blanket term, but it lacks the nuance needed. So, I mean, really, to express the term we want to express, we have to spew out this whole lot of adjectives and such to try to make the point. And pride is one of those things. We say pride, and it's like, well, pride's a good thing, but pride's a bad thing. As Christian believers, and no, I'm not opening the sermon yet, but as Christian believers, we've all heard, but even if you're not a Christian believer, you no doubt have heard the saying that pride goes before fall. But I don't think that's correct, quite correctly translated. I believe a better term would be arrogance goes before a fall. And you could kind of mesh the two together and get a feel for where I'm going with this. Because pride in your people and pride in your accomplishments, there's nothing wrong with that. I don't believe there's anything sinful about looking around, say, at a great society that your people have bought and taking pride in that. If you look at the great accomplishments that your people have made and taking pride, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But there is a problem when you become arrogant. And even arrogant doesn't really get it. An overinflated self-esteem. This is what I mean by that. I think one of the problems with English language is we just don't have a simple term that can really encompass what you're trying to convey. And I think an overinflated sense of self-esteem is a better term. It's just a mouthful, and it's hard to convey it that way. But I see it. I see it in our people. And I kind of saw what made me think of this is here a while back. I went out somewhere to eat lunch on a Sunday. And here in Texas, you can't serve alcohol before noon on a Sunday. It's one of those old laws that's been on the books forever. It was on the books when I was a kid. I remember being a kid back in high school And my part-time job was bagging groceries in a grocery store. Like, you know, they don't really have that anymore. You know, everything is self-serve and you pay more for self-serve. But back then, you went to the grocery store and there was some high school kid there and he would bag your groceries. And that was one of my jobs that I had as a kid when I was a teenager. And I remember back then people would come in and we'd be like, oh God, roll our eyes, you know, because it's like 11:15 and some assholes rolling up to the checkout stand with 12 pack of beer in his buggy. And you know, you're going to have to go through this whole thing. It's been on the books a long time. I went out to eat a couple weeks ago and I'm sitting in the restaurant and I start hearing this commotion. This guy's being real, you know, real asshole basically to the waitress. And I'm listening. So I kind of, you know, I wasn't paying attention. So I kind of perk my ears, see what's going on. This guy's got his voice raised and he's pitching a bitch fit. And he's bitching because it's 11:30 in the morning and he wants my beer. I got to have my beer with my meal. And the waitress is trying to explain to him, well, sir, we can't serve alcohol before noon. And this guy's starting to make a scene, you know, about I thought I had my drinks and you can't, I know how they even bring my drinks now. Somebody can bring my drinks now. Never mind the fact that, you know, why the hell you think you have to have my beer at 11:30 in the freaking morning, you know, whatever, but they're not going to change the law for you. So this guy makes a scene, and in the end, he leaves. He didn't get his meal. He didn't get his beer. He didn't get any of the stuff he showed up wanting, but he got them told. But I was reflecting on this, and it's just beyond the fact that this is just a single incident with somebody. But I was sitting there reflecting. I reflected on that. I think about these things, and I was thinking about that. And I thought, if you asked that person about the accomplishments of the white race, the great societies we have built and the things we've invented, the things we've managed to done, lands we've explored, lands we've conquered, great achievements we have made. He would probably look at you with a blank look on his face. But if you're talking about him personally and my beer at 11:30 in the morning, by golly, he's a snowflake. The laws don't count for him. And it's all about me. I'm important. I'm a snowflake. And the point I guess I was getting to is here's a classic example. Now, on the surface, you might say, oh, well, that person's full of pride, but if not, if you talked about actual things to be prideful of, accomplishments of your people as a race, it would probably mean nothing to them. But if you're talking about self-importance, overinflated self-esteem, it's all about me. I'm important. Then all over that. I was thinking about how our people suffer from several things. They suffer from a lack of actual pride, but people get confused. They see stuff like this and they think that that's a prideful person. He thinks he's so important that the laws don't apply to him. No, our people suffer, all of them, they suffer as a race from a lack of pride, but also many suffer from an overinflated sense of self-esteem. They're important. Everything, all these people run around, put all of this stuff up on social media about their personal lives that nobody gives a shit about, but yet they do it. Why? Because they think they're important. They think everybody else cares about this. So they put it up on Facebook or whatever, but it's an overinflated self-esteem. And these things actually work against one another. The lack of pride our people have in actual accomplishments as a collective, as a race of their ancestors and things such as that. They don't have that. Instead, that's been replaced by arrogance, by an overinflated self-esteem. Most people you run into in your day-to-day life haven't accomplished shit, but boy, they think they're important, don't they? They think if they go to take a dump, they need to update their status on Facebook in the toilet. And boy, am I taking a groaner. Overinflated sense of self-importance, self-esteem. And it was making me think about that. And the point I guess I just really wanted to make was this, that again, the difference between pride and an overinflated self-esteem in the context of these things that ail our people as a race in this Jewed out, zogged out modern world. These aren't the only things that ail our people. The sickening altruism. If our people die off, one of the epitaphs that should be put on the tombstone should be, love is love. That should be the epitaph on the tombstone of the white race. Love is love, no matter how degenerate. There's a story going around on social media, and I actually saw a news story about it. And I don't know, some shithead somewhere, you know, that's supposed to be somebody, but I had never heard of them. But I don't stay up on the people I'm supposed to know about, celebrity types or whatever. And he posted up a picture of his, I don't know, 17-year-old, I think. You know, this is my lovely daughter. It's some dude wearing makeup. And they parade this in the public square. Look how understanding, how enlightened I am. And I read this article, and it was in the Daily Mail. I read this article, and the article was about, oh, how terrible it is. Because he put this out, and he's showing how understanding he is that his teenage son is wearing makeup and parading around in public in a dress, and he's embracing it. And I went, and he was attacked by these horrible by these horrible internet trolls. Yes, this is the world we live in. Internet trolls are the only ones now in this crazy world to have any common sense. Internet trolls are the kid pointing out that the emperor has no clothes. That's all that's left. Everybody else is going along kissing ass. And the article is about how terrible it was that this guy is being attacked by internet trolls for promoting his son's mental illness. And anyway, the point I got to was at the end, you know, I read, because Daily Mail is one of those few news outlets that allow comments on here. And you go into the comments, and it's, these people are sickening. No, not the guy who's parading his teenage son around as, oh, it's my daughter. No, not him. They meant the people attacking him for it. Now, of course, granted, a lot of these comments were probably done by women, but nevertheless, some variation or directly saying, love is love. We see, this is great. He loves his child. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't love your kids no matter what. I'm not saying that at all. But this notion that you should parade around degeneracy with pride, with, there's that word again, with an overinflated self-importance. And they don't parade these people. This guy isn't parade. He didn't put up a picture of his 17-year-old wearing makeup and calling it his daughter because he's really proud of it. They're doing it for social signaling points. They're doing it because they want that positive feedback. They want to hear people tell them, oh, you're great. You're so wonderful. You're understanding. This is one of the great things, by the way, one of the great roles the internet trolls play. They're, in a way, internet trolls are doing God's work when they attack these people and shame them because they're speaking the truth in the public square. These people are discouraged by negative feedback. They do these things because they want the positive feels. And when they receive negative feels, it helps to discourage these sort of things. But I don't know how many of these comments on this news article boil down to, and someone said, love is love. It's one of the dumbest ass statements you can make. Love is love. Oh, that sounds so good. What could be wrong with love, huh? Well, what if a 35-year-old man just loves 6-year-olds? Love is love, right? Well, not that. No. You can't make these statements and then say, oh, well, here's the exception to that. This altruism, this foolishness, this stupidity of statements such as love is love. We wonder where we get into these positions and why we're in these places that we are as a people when we allow attitudes such as this without correcting them. Love is love. Well, then that's open-ended. If a guy loves children, what's wrong with that? Love is love. Well, children, that's different. Children can... there's no end to it. If you're going, love is love. And again, vast majority of people have no idea what love is. Some guy's parading his kid around. How is it loving your son by parading him around on the internet wearing makeup? This is a phase that kid's going through. And next year, he's off of that and he's lifting and he wants to go get a girlfriend. Well, thanks, Dad, for parading my picture in a makeup and a dress all over the internet because now I can't get over that. Here's a father parading a picture of his son around on the internet in a dress and lipstick. Oh, he's a she. See how understanding I am? See how embracing I am? I love him. See how much I love him? I love him by putting his picture all over the internet. Because what is it saying? Yeah, really, they sit here and say, oh, well, see, he identifies as a she. And so, see, he's being understanding. Let's boil things. Man, we're going to keep it family friendly, but we're going to call the truth out for what it is. Sometimes that truth is uncomfortable, and sometimes so we're going to do the best we can to strike that balance. This guy's parading his 17-year-old around on the internet for everybody to see on permanent record. The internet doesn't go away. He's publicly parading him around in a dress and lipstick on and calling him a she. What are we talking about? We're talking about his 17-year-old taking dick. And again, I'm not trying to be crude. I'm not trying to be vulgar. You know I'm not. I don't know any other way to put it. We're talking about sexual degeneracy. We're not talking about, oh, this vague towel, he just likes to dress it. No, we're talking about he's going to be sucking dick. He's going to be taking dick in his ass. Again, I'm trying to keep this as family friendly, but I think we get into a problem when we try to sugarcoat these things and dance around without actually talking about them, because they are uncomfortable, because it does make us feel uneasy, and we don't call it for what it is. Here's a grown man putting a picture of his teenage son on and saying, guess what? I'm so proud. This kid's going to have a dick in his throat. Probably already has. What in the hell? Oh, love is love. How in the hell is that love? Like I said, what, this is just a phase this kid's going through. His hormones are all jacked up because he's a teenager. And a year from now, he's like, what the hell is that? That was embarrassing shit. I'm over that now. Now I'm lifting and I'm feeling good about myself. I got this cute girl I want to see. Only now there's these pictures of me all over the internet wearing a makeup dress, looking like a complete faggot. Thanks, Dad. Love is love. Not very much love there, is it? The epitaph of our people, love is love, this altruism, no matter how degenerate. Love is love. Look at these two guys. They're just like a regular man and woman couple. Yeah, except for the hairy ass butt sex. I mean, there is that, you know. You know, but other than that, I see these things. How many people fill the comments with acceptance, quote unquote, acceptance. Positive feedback for promoting degeneracy. I'm not going to start the Christian segment yet, so don't think I'm launching into that. But this is something I want. This, you know, again, realistic. Realism. The reality of the world we face. As Christian believers, in our Christian segment, a lot of y'all don't stick around for that, and that's fine. But in our Christian segment, we talk a lot about being a part of the remnant of Christianity. And again, bear with me here, because I'm not preaching to you. I promise I'm not. We talk a lot about the remnant. There's only a remnant of Christianity. All these people running around talking about being Christians, but they're going to wind up in hell. There's only a remnant of real Christianity left. It's a small remnant. And the point I was going to make here is that all of you, they're listening to this show. You're listening to this show because you love your race. You love your people. You think your people are worth preserving. And when you read stuff like this, when you look at these huge amount of comments that are accepting love is love, and this altruism and this sickening promotion of degeneracy among your people, you have to be prepared for the idea that only a remnant of the white race is quite possibly going to survive. And I am going to discuss this further in the Christian segment and get into the religious aspect of it, but that's not what we're doing now. So again, don't turn me off. I'm not preaching to you, but as a race, there could only be a remnant left. There are countries in Eastern Europe, and I believe even Russia, where they're in a much better position of preserving the quote-unquote white race. And I say quote-unquote because, I mean, we're talking Russians, not British. I mean, you're talking about subsects, if you were, of the white race that don't have a very good chance for survival. The mongrelization of America, the white race in America. I don't know how good our chances of survival are. I mean, I'm not trying to blackpill you or make you give up on the struggle at all. In fact, I want you to be mentally prepared for the realistic fact that if you think that all of our white nations are going to be saved, I don't really think that's realistic. I think we're going to wind up with, I don't think white people in the world are going to cease to exist. Because I hate to shatter the wet dreams of the Jew here, but I don't believe white people as a race are going to cease to exist. But I think certain subsects might. I think certain civilizations are going to be lost. I hope not. And I think I'm not saying, well, then we should just give up on certain areas and not try to save them. I'm not saying that at all. But again, I like to approach everything with as realistic an outlook as possible. And I'm telling you that you need to be mentally preparing yourself for the fact that you ain't going to save all the people. I mean, let's be honest, if Grandpa Lampshade were to sever off the, say, a third of the United States and build a Nazi, if I was to build a Nazi empire, if I was suddenly just, all of a sudden, a third of the U.S. is mine, and I'm building my Nazi empire, setting aside the other races for men, just focusing on the white race, and there's a lot of assholes to re-educate or cull out of the herd. Hey, that's a fact. You know, you're going to have to do something with this love is love attitude and this promotion of degeneracy. And this is coming from white people. It ain't all just Jews. I mean, it's nice when we can point to these things being promoted so many times and it's Jews. But I mean, let's be honest. It isn't all Jews. Yes, it's promoted. It's been brought to social acceptance via the Jews. But our people, by and large, a significant number of our people have bought into this nonsense. Hook, line, and sinker. And yes, some of them can be brought around. Some of them can be brought to back to reality and can get some pride. And just once you make things socially unacceptable, a lot of people all of a sudden they'll go the other direction. I pointed this out the other day that when you look at those huge Nazi rallies and everything, and you look at that, you know, just remember how bad things were in Weimar Germany. A lot of those people out there in those big rallies were the same degenerates that were running around 10 years before. So, I mean, a lot of that can be turned around, but that having been said, a lot of it won't be. A lot of our nations are so far gone now that I don't think there's going to be any coming back. I can't name which ones because I don't know how history is going to play out. But the realistic outlook here is I believe some cultures and civilizations in our white race are going to be lost. I mean, again, we have to fight for them because we don't know which ones might and which ones not. We got to try our best to save all of them. But realistically speaking, if we don't, we can't get discouraged by that. We have to save whatever we can. It's kind of like if you knew a disaster was coming to your house. So you're in your house and we hear about these big wildfires coming. And they're evacuating people, you know, and they're like, hey, you know, you've got 30 minutes to get your shit and get whatever shit you can and get out because fire's coming. It's going to burn all your property to the ground. Not going to be saved. You know, well, you've got 30 minutes. You're not going to pack up everything you own in your house and get out in 30 minutes. It's not going to happen. So you run around and you start trying to save what's important. You know, you get your me, I'm going to get my dogs first, my family, obviously, my dogs, important papers, you know, things such as that I'm going to need, you know, and then maybe a few other articles or whatever that I can, and then get out. But you can't save the house. You don't have the power to stop the wildfire that's going to come and consume your property. You have to save whatever you can, but you're not going to be able to save everything. I think that's just a realistic approach. Again, I'm not trying to blackpay. I'm not trying to tell you. I'm telling you, we need to run around and save everything we can. But don't get discouraged if and when it starts becoming obvious that we're not going to be able to save everything. kind of gone off, I guess, a bit on a tangent there. But as you can tell, I mean, that's kind of how it is. I go from black pill, white pill, because I'm constantly trying. You should too, I'd say, constantly trying to deal in reality. And sometimes that reality is not encouraging. Sometimes it is. Sometimes you look at things and things are looking up. You're seeing progress made. And then you look at the other things and it's like, man, this is an uphill battle. When an article that if it was put up, can you imagine an article if you've got some age on you like me? Can you imagine 20, 30 years ago? Imagine 30 years ago. Imagine if this was 1988 and there was a public article about this guy publicly, how proud he was of his quote unquote daughter. And there's this teenage son in a dress and lipstick. I mean, can you imagine the public reaction to this? The first reaction I think people would have is mine. That I still have, which is, you know, what's this pervert been doing to his kid all these years? I do. I see a lot. I realize a lot of this stuff. Some of it's just being encouraged by society. But when I see something like that, when I see a dad, a father talking about how his child is trans, My first reactions is, how long have you been diddling that kid? I'm getting my rope out. I think it's time to waterboard this bastard and see what the hell he's been up to. I think it may be about time for a hanging. But hey, you know, I'm old school. I'm not modern. I'm not cultured. And I haven't grasped the concept that love is love. We're going to go ahead and wrap up the regular portion of the show on that note. I hope you've enjoyed the show. Okay. Like I said, we kind of got off on a tangent there a little bit. The idea is always to promote having you think about this. And you're liable to keep thinking about these things and think of points that I completely failed to mention. And that's always the idea of the show. I mean, to keep you thinking afterwards. And I hope we've done that today. I hope you've found something to continue to ponder about these things and consider where we're at, where we're going, the reality of our situation. And our situation moving forward. So again, if you're not staying tuned for the Church of the Lampshade, thank you again for joining us. Thank you again for our sponsors. The rest of y'all, we're going to head on into church here. So, you know, see y'all later. Rest of y'all, get on in here. Fill those pews. It's time for the Church of the Lampshade with the Reverend Lampshade. Thank you for joining us, folks. And we're going to kind of continue this week as we enter our Christian segment. As you get yourself seated, situated, perhaps pause for a minute and get you a fresh cup of coffee. We're going to kind of continue part of our discussion from earlier as far as remnants of nations and remnants of a people. And we talk a lot again about the remnant of Christianity. I thought we'd talk a little bit, though, about merging that into our people. And again, I kind of touched on this earlier in the regular portion of the show, but I didn't want to get all preachy on everybody there that's not interested in hearing that take on it. We move it into the Christian segment, and then those same people, you know, stick around for that. That's good. But you can't piss and moan at me because you ain't preaching. No, yeah, it's the Christian segment. It's what we did. But I thought we would kind of merge our talking about the remnant of Christianity with the remnant of our people. And I guess what I thought we'd talk about is how I've heard a lot of people over the years and such here in America. And they'll say, you know, yeah, they look at like these Muslims, for instance, and they sit here and say, but you know, they're so bad. They're so shitty. Look at these horrible things that they do. And they're a brutal, uncivilized people. Yes, America's shitty. Yes, America's lost its way. Yes, America has backslidden and fallen into sin. But by and large, we're still a Christian nation. We're still the most Christian nation on earth compared to these other assholes. So surely God is still going to bless us. God's still going to bless America. And he's going to, because I mean, you know, come on. I mean, yeah, America's kind of become a sinful nature. Kind of become a sinful nation, I should say. But come on, compared to these Muslims, are godless, evil, wicked people that don't have nothing to do. They don't have nothing to do with Jesus and my Bible and things such as that. How we talk about that attitude a little bit. God bless America. We're still the most Christian nation on earth. So God's still going to have our back. God's still going to bless America. This is a completely incorrect attitude to have. Let me ask you something. Say you've got a couple kids, say they're little kids, say 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, and you go to town, you go to the store with your kids. Now, while you're in town, you see other parents there, and they got kids around your same age and such. Now, these other people you see in town, their kids are running around, just little freaking heathens. You know what I'm talking about. So you go to the restaurant and these kids are running up and down the aisle. Everybody's trying to enjoy a meal. You've been there. You know what I'm talking about. And these people's little shits are running up and down the aisles, you know, looking at people's plates, see what they're eating. And the parents don't say anything. Or you're in the store and these people, you go to the store and people let their kids run into the toy aisle at the store and pull off the toys on the shelf and play with them like they're theirs. They're not. They're for sale. They're not for their kids. This isn't a babysitting section. But by and large, you pretty much for the most part, you might say something, you may not, but for the most part, you're probably not. You're not going to go over there and snatch that kid up and say, hey, kid, those ain't your toys. They're for sale. Quit it. Put that shit back. You probably don't. Now, your kids start to do so. Your kids start hollering, throwing a fit because they want a candy bar in that same store. And you're like, hey, no, Don't even start that crap with me. I take you out of this car, you ain't gonna like it. Don't make me drag your ass out. Now, these other kids were running around yanking toys off the shelf, and you say nothing to them. But yet you're being hard on your kid because they're throwing a bit of a tantrum because they want a candy bar. Aren't you being harder on your kids? Yes, exactly. You're harder on your own children than you are on people, on children that are not your own. So it is with our Father in heaven. I've said on numerous occasions, there is a reason that the enemy, the devil, largely via his number one ambassadors, his number one envoys to this world, the Jews, seek to destroy the white race. I believe the white race is the race that is closest to God. Thus, this is why the devil makes war against the white race. This is why you see this effort, this coordinated effort worldwide to kill off white people. Because it is the race closest to God, just as the Jews are the race closest to the devil. Now, if such is the case, then would God, the Father, not also play the role as the father in the store? Is he not going to be harder on his own children? Is he not going to expect a higher standard of behavior from his own children? This is the problem with the attitude of, well, yeah, America's pretty sinful and pretty, you think? We're promoting every sort of sexual degeneracy, mental illness. We're half a step away. You think I'm over the top. We are half a step away from condoning child sex in this country. You see teenagers, we just talked about this. You see teenagers, we're embracing transgenderism for teens. We're embracing transgenderism now for little kids. And transgenderism means this male child will be having sex with other men. This is what it means. This is, you see the slippery slope. This is how it's used. You promote the transgenderism in adult males. Then you promote it in teenagers. Now they're promoting it in children. And transgenderism is nothing but open promotion of homosexuality. So now they're promoting man sex with little kids via this transgenderism. This is how it's being used. This is a spiritual attack that is taking place on your people right in front of your eyes. My 8-year-old is transgender. You're promoting your 8-year-old is ready to have man sex. That's not what I mean. It is what you're promoting. Is what is being promoted in the public sphere. America is still more godly than these Muslim countries. Is a father not harder on his own children? This should make you, well, white people, the race closest to God. Yes, it is. That doesn't mean he's going to let you run wild in the store because these other kids are. It means he's going to crack down on your ass. I think I've got an example here to kind of help illustrate this. I like to throw in some Bible verse to kind of help illustrate these points so you don't think I'm just pulling this stuff out of my ass here. Not, you don't get this kind of preaching in church, do you? We're going to rock Old Testament here. Let's go to the book of Ezekiel, chapter 21. And when we talk about these things for a moment, before we set off in this, you know, I want to lay something out here. Because when you get in the Old Testament, you know, they talk about Israel. And I want you to set aside the purpose conflation of Old Testament Israel and this abomination of kikes that's in the Middle East now. That's an abomination and a lie that's purposely been set forth, purposely been put in place to confuse you, to confuse the people. Not conflate that. So when we talk Old Testament, we talk about Israel. We're not talking about this modern kike nest in the Middle East. That's an abomination put in place to deceive the people. So here we go. We're going to skip around a little bit here, but we're going to open up here and we're going to skip to another verse. So Ezekiel chapter 21, verse 1, the word of the Lord came to me, son of man, set your face against Jerusalem and preach against the sanctuary, prophesy against the land of Israel and say to her, this is what the Lord says. I'm against you. I'll draw my sword from its scabbard and cut off from you both the righteous and the wicked, because I am going to cut off the righteous and the wicked. My sword will be unsheathed against everyone from south to north. Then all the people will know that I, the Lord, have drawn my sword from its scabbard, and it will not return again. Sticking same chapter, but skipping forward to verse 18. The word of the Lord came to me, son of man, mark out two roads for the sword of the king of Babylon to take, both starting from the same country. Make a signpost where the road branches off to the city. Mark one road for the sword to come against Rabbah and the Ammonites, and another against Judah, and fortified Jerusalem. For the king of Babylon will stop at the fork in the road, at the junction of the two roads, to seek an omen. He will cast lots with arrows. He will consult the idols, his idols. He will examine the liver. Into his right hand will come the lot for Jerusalem, where he is to set up battering rams, to give the command to slaughter, to sound the battle cry, to set battering rams against the gates, to build a ramp and to erect siege works. It will seem like a false omen to those who have sworn allegiance to him, but he will remind them of their guilt and take them captive. And finishing out, continuing on, therefore, this is what the sovereign Lord says, because you people have brought to mind your guilt by your open rebellion, revealing your sins and all that you do, because you have done this, you will be taken captive. O profane and wicked prince of Israel, whose day is come, whose time of punishment has reached its climax. This is what the sovereign Lord says. Take off the turban, remove your crown. It will not be as it was. The lowly will be exalted, and the exalted will be brought low. A ruin, I will make it a ruin. It will not be restored until he comes to whom it rightfully belongs. To him I will give it. What's the point here? He's talking, the prophecy is against this ancient nation, this ancient people of Israel. And again, don't conflate it with this modern Rakhine state. So bear with me. Because again, as I've always pointed out, when you read the Old Testament, try to read it in the context, instead of trying to get hung up on, well, who exactly, what people is he talking about? Try to view it in the context of man. This is God revealing his interactions with people, societies, in a big scale version, large scale macro vision of how God interacts with man. Now, you have this nation of Israel that God is now, he's pissed at. I mean, they had a deal. They've been in constant rebellion. They're full of sins. So now you've got the Babylonians coming. The king of Babylon's coming. The Babylonians were real assholes. They were. I mean, it's not like the Babylonians were closer to God. The Babylonians became closer to God than the ancient nation of Israel. No, not at all. I mean, if you looked at the context, people would have said, well, yeah, you know, okay, I look around at my nation and yeah, we're shitty and we've set up all these idols and we're doing these things and we're promoting all this degeneracy that God told us not to do, but we're still better than the Babylonians. This is a godless, horrible, brutal bunch that worships these idols and stuff. They're way worse than we are. Sound familiar? I'm telling you, the father is always more stern, more strict, always holds his own children to a higher standard. And when you were talking about God the Father and his people, he will use a nation more wicked, a nation that's not of his people, and allow them to come against his people and bring them low, because he has a higher standard for his people. Bringing us back around full circle and trying to hopefully tie this all up in a nice, neat bow. From what we discussed earlier, when I told everybody in the normal segment of the show, yes, we have to struggle and fight for all we can. We have to try to do what we can do. But you also need to be mentally prepared for the fact that maybe and only a remnant of, quote, of the white race, is using a general term, is going to continue to exist. There may cease to exist a Britain, though a Russia may continue to exist. There may cease to exist a France, while a Hungary may continue to exist, why Finland may continue to exist. I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying certain nations are definitely not going to. I'm just saying you have to understand that we're quite possibly going to wind up with a remnant of our race as well. We talk about the remnant of Christianity all the time. You listen to these sermons, you listen to this segment of the show, you're quite familiar with the concept of a remnant of Christianity. But you have to understand that can also apply to a remnant of our very race. People who become arrogant and sit here and say, well, America's still the most God-fearing country. That's actually a scarier thing. If you look at the context of the scripture that we just discussed, again, in the context of God's larger interaction with man in general and his people, those he claims as his people in particular. How could you say that? Oh, I got a bitter voice. My coffee got cold and nasty. Okay. How can you say that? We're bad. Yeah, our nation's bad. It's full of sin and wickedness and everything, but it's still better than these Muslims. God would absolutely use these. He's sitting here and say, but these Muslims ain't going to take over America. They're not going to conquer America. America's still the most God-fearing nation. Should be full of fear about this. There's great burden that comes with being a race that's closest to God, to being children of God. The Father's going to hold you to a higher standard. And he would absolutely, as a people, use a godless and wicked race, a godless and wicked nation, to bring our nations low, to bring your nation low, to weed out, to punish your people. Because it's not because the Father doesn't love his children, it's because he holds his children to a higher standard. Going back to the earlier illustration of a father sternly disciplining his kids, throwing a tantrum over candy bar while these other kids are running up and down and pulling toys off the toy aisle. As these calamities befall our different white nations, the people become tempted to say, where's God? Why is God allowing this to happen? If God really loves his children, why is this happening? Why are these wicked and godless races being allowed to invade our nations? Just remember, no father runs around disciplining other people's children. He loves and disciplines his own. Don't be like the masses. Don't be like those who sit around and say, well, they dismiss the sin that has overtaken our nations, the wickedness, the degeneracy. They dismiss these things as they look around at these other races, at these other nations, and say, well, we're still better than them. Pay heed and remember, God, as any father, holds his children to a higher standard than he does other people's children. Just as you hold your own children to a higher standard than the children of some stranger that you don't know anything about in a store. Just as you hold your own children to a higher standard, do not be surprised when God does the same. We're going to wrap up the show on this note. Thank you for joining us. Those of you who've stuck around for the Church of the Lampshade segment, I hope you got something out of it. I hope you got something out of all the show and hope you enjoyed the visit. I know I have. I enjoy interacting with y'all all through the week on social media, on Gab. If you're on Gab, get on Gab. Follow Grandpa Lampshade. It's fun times. We have a lot of time. It's aggravating at times, but it's nice to have lots of like-minded people also in our own circles doing what we do. Hit me up. Be sure and check out the blog, the Semitic Truth Center, the Grandpa Lampshade blog. I don't get articles up as often as I would like, but I like to believe that when we do so, they're top notch. So, I'm out and about all over the place. We have a lot of fun. You can catch me there. You can catch me, of course, here on Radio Air, and you catch me over on Gap. Also, you can check us out. Check out the guys over at thepuritiespiral.com. It's a pretty fun forum. And, if you like, check it out, want to get on a forum with like-minded individuals, it's not a bad place to hang out. So, again, we're going to wrap up on that note. Thank you again for our sponsors. And, we got outro music this week from Philbert Applebag. Thank you very much. And, again, looking into the future, I think we're going to have a next show or two. We should have a listener brought to music, which is always a special treat. So look forward to that as well. Thank you again for joining us. We'll see you next week right here in Radio Arian or wherever you found us for Grandpa Lampshade's Thoughts of the Day.
We'll be right back.